When most people look at wild plants growing by the side of the road or in their lawns, their first thought is often, ugh, weeds. However, Tama Matsuoka Wong sees something altogether different, food. She's written a new book about them called Forage Flavors with Eddie LaRue, the chef de cuisine at Danielle, and I'm very pleased it has brought her to our show today. Hello.
Hi, Leonard. Thank you for having me.
Now, before you got interested in foraging, didn't you enjoy a successful career as a financial attorney and a manager and a corporate counsel for Merrill Lynch? Were you foraging for clients in those days?
No, I didn't forage for clients, although there's some similarities, but it was great. I really enjoyed that job. I was overseas for a large part of it.
And what got you interested in edible wild plants? Was it something that happened while you were overseas?
I didn't really think about it that much. I mean, if I think back on it now, when I grew up in New Jersey, and my mother always had a garden, and she was actually foraging around and picking dandelions and things that's just we didn't think of it as foraging. Mm-hmm. And when I was in Asia, a lot of things that people eat in Japan and other things are actually wild plants at a certain time in the year. I just didn't know the word foraging.
Well, it's interesting that in many cultures around the world, foraging is just a part of the normal process.
Something they do in the seasons. It's a seasonal.
And we've kind of lost that. Is something happened in the European tradition?
I don't know. I mean, I guess I tend to think of it for myself that maybe one of the reasons that we're not doing this in this country is because we're a nation of immigrants. And so we've kind of lost that connection with what our grandmothers or grandfathers or people in the countries we came from are doing.
Because they knew the plants of their
yes,
country, but then they came here, found very different
wild
plants.
But the interesting thing is the plants from overseas are coming here along with the people so that you can find them here now.
So what got you interested in edible wild plants and to the point where you actually got into the business?
I started off from a stewardship point of view. So I moved back to New Jersey after being in Hong Kong for a long time. And I think I reappreciated the land and what we have here. So I really just wanted to take care of the place I had, my little place, and I got to know the plants that were around me. And that's how I started to get to know the plants first. And then the next thing is really eating them and how else can you use them.
And how long did it take for that transition from the trading floor to the forest floor?
I don't know. It was very organic, so I didn't really think about it that way. And last winter, I still did some trading floor consulting work. So.
And I gather sometimes you would actually take the PATH train carrying a lot of forage plants and
yes,
then go onto to Wall
the
Street.
Trading floor.
But now you've taken up foraging full time?
I am foraging full time now.
How did you develop a relationship with Eddie LaRue, the chef de cuisine at Danielle?
That was also, you know, I'd say fate or circumstance. It was somewhat random in that friends had invited us to eat at the restaurant Danielle to celebrate their anniversary. And I had brought in some plants from my meadow that we've been enjoying. And in the morning, I brought it in. And the receptionist called down, and Eddie answered the phone and said, and that evening they made it into part of our meal. But I think, and then he asked me what else I had in my meadow because we went to the kitchen afterwards. But after that, it took about a year that, you know, he said, bring me everything. And we took a year of kind of this almost research project to look at all the plants and see what parts were good. And
because some of them probably don't taste all that interesting, or you have to figure out what kind of dish to use them in.
Right. So I think there's a difference between edible and delicious. So I knew which ones were edible because there's a lot of edible field guides out there since the times of Yul Gibbons and Petersons. And a lot of them just say put it in tea or a salad. And I wanted something more than that. So
there's a famous restaurant in Denmark called Noma. They use forage things, but they often use things that you don't eat, but they use them to impart flavor through steaming or
infusing
some other product with the flavor of the foraged item, pine needles and things like that.
So, well, Danielle's using pine needles too, but Mads, who's here, who was the co-founder of Noma, is definitely using juniper and other evergreens to infuse a great evergreen aroma to fish and other things.
Now, should we be surprised that this is happening? Foraging for wild plants goes back to prehistoric hunter-gatherer days. As we said, they're eaten in many parts of the world as basic staples. In China, also as part of Chinese medicine, I think in the Amazon as well. Mm-hmm. So when you go through, well, first of all, where do you get your stuff?
I get the things from my own property. And then I also have, so a lot of the things that I'm getting that I eat for my family that we eat are from my own place. And I think a lot of people can find it in their own places too.
So what happens? You go out in the garden and you say, oh, good, weeds.
Actually, I look at things and I see which things there's a lot of that I don't know. And I think, okay, what can I do with this? And I try and bring them to chefs and see what they think.
Well, to most people today, foraging means looking for mushrooms. You don't even include mushrooms in your book, Forage Flavor.
There's a couple that are the most, like oyster mushrooms, that are easier more to identify. But I think you have to be a little bit careful with mushrooms. And it's not as the book is supposed to be something for everybody that you can find in your backyard that's easy. And I think mushrooms, 96% of mushrooms are not edible.
What about weeds? Would I want to cook with poison ivy?
No. Well, we do give an alert about poison ivy in there. But a lot of weeds that are in your backyard or farm or farmer's field that are growing as weeds are actually, as I was saying before, culinary ingredients from other places in the world.
Mm-hmm. Well, different people see value in stuff that others consider to be junk. For example, there's a thing that the Mexicans eat called huitlacoche, which is a American farmers call corn smut. It's a fungus that attacks corn. In this country, farmers burn it. In Mexico, they say, oh, good, I'm going to make some real money today.
I do think there is something happening from a grassroots point of view. I think that people are starting to think more about where their food comes from, and they're thinking more about waste and how they can make more of what's around them. And that's why I think people are interested in this again.
My guest is Tama Matsuoka Wong. Her book, Forage Flavor, published by Clarkson Potter, which includes a lot of recipes that you developed with Eddie LaRue of Restaurant Danielle.
Yes, and that is a whole other story. So the recipes are not recipes at the restaurant. They're really recipes that he came up with that were simple for home kitchen use. So we had to test them at home. And they're not all French recipes. There's some that are Asian-inspired, some that are Middle Eastern-inspired, et cetera.
And where would I find the things that – where would I forage for them? In July, the New York Times published an article about people foraging in city parks and the effect that's having on the flora and fauna there. It's not legal to forage in city parks. You get a $250 fine, don't you?
Yes, and the Parks Department also says that they're trying to restore a lot of areas, so people picking things is not really helping what they're trying to do. And also a lot of the places they don't recommend because they're spraying them or they're on brownfields. So I really recommend that people can – any place you could have a little herb garden or a planter, you can see weeds there.
So you can grow your own weeds?
Yes.
are there places, woods, that I might want to go into?
I think that you should try and collaborate with organizations or people that own property if you don't have your own or you don't have a planter. So your farmer, your CSA, if you know a conservation group, sign up with them and say you'll help pull out some of their invasive plants another organization that has or your neighbor who has a field or something.
Are we seeing foraged products at green markets these days?
Yes, I think I've seen lamb's quarters and purslane. I think people have seen chickweed, et cetera. So.
And different things come into season at different time. Are you talking mostly about indigenous plants? You mentioned earlier that now things are coming from other parts of the world. People growing these weeds on purpose?
I think some people might be growing stinging nettle, for example, because I think some farms, they had a lot of it, and I don't know whether they're called. I know that you can actually buy seeds for purslane. There's a certain type of golden purslane or something. So you can. So I think some people are propagating them. But as to your question about native plants or not native plants, that's part of why I have this code, a sustainability code. And so a lot of the plants that you can forage without worrying about sustainability are non-native plants or invasive plants, even better.
Mm-hmm. And you have certain guidelines that you provide here about doing this in a sustainable way.
Yes.
So how do you go avoid negatively impacting on the environment?
So that's why, for example, the invasive plants is a really good way to start, or a non-native plant, because a lot of organizations are trying to get rid of them. So it's actually waste, or people are throwing them out, like chickweed or dandelion. So all you would have to do is look at it a different way and pick it in a culinary manner, and you have your dinner.
Chickweed and wild barberry are in season right now.
Yes, and I have some in my bag for you.
You brought them.
Yes.
We have two. Excuse me. I have a little bit of a tickle here. Not because of any chickweed or wild barberry. We have two recipes that highlight those ingredients on our website. Chickweed with sesame and soy sauce, and wild barberry rice pudding. Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about them?
So the chickweed, these are all Eddie's recipes, which we tested at home in a home kitchen. The chickweed recipe is actually an Asian recipe. A lot of Japanese use this kind of a flavoring in actually wild ingredients in the spring. And chickweed is one of the seven wild herbs of spring.
So certain plants will lend themselves to distinct cuisines? Because, for example, as we said, chickweed with sesame and soy sauce, that does sound very Asian.
Yes. Although we do have another, he does have another chickweed crostini recipe in the book. So there's a lot of different ones. So hopefully somebody can, almost everyone can find something to their liking.
So there are still problems out there. I want to get back to some of the other issues that, because we're seeing more and more foraging in Sandy Hook, New Jersey, a part of the Federal Gateway National Recreation Area. Foraging is limited. They do allow it, but it's limited to beach plum fruit, berries, and mushrooms, and only one quart per person per day. Those restrictions make sense, don't they?
Yes, and I actually have foraged for beach plums on Sandy Hook.
And what are beach plums like?
It depends on the year. Actually, this year was a really great year. And I did this through collaboration with New Jersey Audubon that has a little center there, so I would know exactly how to do it in places. But when I wanted to, that's where I say there's a difference between doing it for yourself. I didn't, when I foraged, I didn't do that commercially.
Are some of the things that are foraged produce that people ate regularly in the past? For example, the pawpaw,
yes,
which is coming back into fashion. But for a long time was forgotten during Jefferson's time. He actually brought pawpaw to Europe to show them how wonderful some of the indigenous plants of the United States are.
I think that's great to bring back some of the plants that people in this country used to eat also.
So what happened with pawpaw? Did they function as weeds?
I had to broaden my definition of what a weed was. In the beginning, I did not think these were weeds, but I realized that anytime that people were cutting down things like sumac and pawpaw because they weren't what they were trying to plant. And so weeds are really anything that isn't what you're trying to grow.
Robert left this comment on our show page. My grandmother used to forage for greens in the Bronx, what you folks call the South Bronx, when she arrived from Italy in the early 1900s. She used to bring my mom with her, and mom knows some greens to pick, for example, along the Amtrak, previously the New York Central line, that runs through the Bronx around 149th through 153rd streets on Park Avenue. On a fairly recent walk with mom, who is 91, she pointed out the areas where grandma would pick dandelions, among other salad and cooking greens that grow there or used to. We did see dandelions only on this walk. Grandma walked there to meet grandpa after work, where he was a foreman in the New York Central Line Railroad from 1905 through 1943 when he died. But I'm concerned about that. Picking stuff along roadways and such can be a little dangerous, can't it, because of all the pollution in New York?
Yeah. Well, yes, I agree that it all starts with the soil or the earth where you're picking it from, like anything else. So you want, the first thing is to make sure you have permission or wherever you're picking. And then the next is to make sure you're picking from a place that is a good landscape, a good quality landscape.
We have a call from Stephanie in Brooklyn. Hi, Stephanie. You're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering, I've often wanted to try pulling up some dandelions or other weeds in on our terrace where the soil is safe. But I'm wondering, is there any possibility that I could accidentally pick something poisonous?
And along those lines, someone else called by asking about a particular plant he can't identify. And He wonders whether you can recommend how you go about learning what weeds are and how to identify
them. So I would think dandelion is pretty easy. We do have, we try to make it as simple as possible, a kind of five-step little guide in Forage Flavor about how to start to think of and identify plants. But that being said, I actually did have someone in New York City who sent something that was definitely not a dandelion because it was 6 feet high. So, but you can post a photo to our website, meadowsandmore.com, and we have some field botanists, not just a public forum, that will answer your questions if you really feel unsure.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Tell us more about Meadows and More.
I formed it to try and connect people in the community with nature, landscapes, and natural landscapes, and now food from nature with nature.
So people can check out something that they have found and see and find a picture of it.
Yes, so there's a plant.
Say, oh, gee, that's okay. And yes. and Tama recommends that I cook it with sesame.
Yeah, so we can talk. So one of the botanists is one of the top botanists this east of the Mississippi, Carl Anderson. And he just loves to get these questions. And then we will also post recipes. Usually we test them first and then post recipes on the website, et cetera. So.
The listener who said that he can't identify a weed says that it is a 20-foot-tall monstrosity of a weed with small white flowers and dagger-like leaves.
I think that is not a good enough description. It would be good to post a photo or, you know, contact us on through our website, and we're all there for you.
Your work has not gone unappreciated. In 2007, you were awarded the New Jersey Forest Service Steward of the Year Award. And as you said, now you're talking with many botanists and conservation groups. Has all of that influenced the way you forage?
Yes. Well, I think it's influenced. Actually, it's more the other way. Is that foraging? I started with the botanists and the conservation group, but foraging has taken it one step further for me in the way I look at landscapes.
Well, you've also been able to map wild plants and their ecological behavior throughout New Jersey.
Yes, that is part of a system that has been developed in Chicago, and the EPA is now using, called the Plant Stewardship Index or the Floristic Quality Assessment Index. But it really means that if you look at the plants that are growing on a particular piece of land, it can tell you a lot about the quality of that landscape. It's very interesting.
And
it's an apolitical. It's an apolitical assessment. And their history, yes.
You're also a mother of three. Does your whole family get involved with foraging?
Yes. My youngest daughter is an expert at climbing pawpaw trees.
Are they out of season now?
I'm just bringing in the last batch this weekend.
What do you do with them?
Well, we're making Mads's sorbet. I have a whole stash now in the freezer. Mm-hmm. And there's also a savory that can also be used in a savory way. So Eddie's using it with vanilla and parsnips to go with like a duck or a foie gras.
It's kind of like a mango, isn't it?
Like a cross between a mango and a banana. But I think for us, the light bulb went off working with chefs in that all the prevailing information on the internet said to pick it when it's yellow and falls off the tree. And it's very funky then. So we're just picking a little bit underripe.
Well, you are working with Restaurant Danielle and other Danielle restaurants and with the chef at Acme. Are you hearing of other chefs also becoming interested in foraging?
Yes. And I only can have a few sort of customized relationships with chefs, but I do have a distributor for other more generic things. If we have called Zone 7, they're relating between small farmers and restaurants.
Now, the book Forage Flavor, which is written by Tama Matsuoka Wong and Eddie LaRue, subtitled Finding Fabulous Ingredients in Your Backyard or Farmer's Market, has photographs in it and drawings. So a lot of the things that we might be curious about can be identified simply by using this book, and then you tell us how to cook them.
And the ebook has additional field photos. I think that it is important to look at the structure of the plant and not try to completely match the photo with the plant, because there's so much variety in the wild that can be a little different. So
you can find the two recipes I mentioned on our show page at WNYC.org. The book is published by Clarkson Potter. Tama, thank you so much for being with us.
Okay, thank you.
The book Forage Flavored, with 88 recipes, Tamamatsuoka Wong and Eddie LaRue, published by Clarkson Potter.